This episode is sponsored by Vera. The world needs more data superheroes. Vera empowers you to be a data superhero with superhuman abilities to work data in a way that is faster, easier, and way more fun than what you're doing today. It's the easiest self-service data prep to access, transform, analyze, and share. And it just got better with the introduction of Vera 5.0. Vera 5.0 makes it easier than ever to defeat the villains in your data prep process and realize your inner data superhero with a redesigned user experience, new functional nodes, and faster technology. You know the drill. 80% of your work along the way is fighting data in multiple places and different formats. Then there's cleaning, deduping, and transforming the data for analysis. So make sure you check out the very cool The World Needs More Data Superheroes video trailer at getvera.com and give them a shout for your very own trial version or personalized demo. Welcome to Partially Derivative, the show about data, data science, machine learning, artificial intelligence, and all things super geek. My name is Vidya, and co-hosting with me is...
Heyo, Chris. All right. First story is mine. I guess the only story is mine.
The one story we have is mine.
All right. So last week we discussed Francois Chollet's great blog post on the limits of deep learning. And if you are interested in hearing that, just go back one week. Although that episode isn't a prerequisite for this episode. So Chollet is back with a second blog post, this time on the future of deep learning. Now, before we get too far ahead of yourselves, I feel like I should sort of explain or re-explain who Chollet is, and so you can actually understand, like, frankly, why the fuck you should care what he says, and you should care. So right now, there's this big explosion of artificial intelligence in academia and industry, and that's only been happening for, you know, about the past 10 years, although I guess technically it would be 11 years, but whatever, fine, whatever. Anyway... the reason for this is sort of this perfect storm of data and cheap computing power and the development of sort of the theory about artificial neural networks. And that's what we're really talking about. Because artificial neural networks, if you don't know, are what's being used for self-driving cars and image recognition and automated translation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And specifically, when artificial neural networks get to a certain size, they're what people consider as deep, quote unquote. And that's why people call it deep learning, because you have big, deep artificial neural networks. All right. They're being applied everywhere, but one thing that you kind of need for all of this stuff to become popularized in sort of the applied worlds, right? The world that me and you sort of work in, is that you need open source software libraries to help data scientists and machine learning engineers actually build these things, like, you know, rapidly, as opposed to like, all right, let's start from scratch, you know, like I'm gonna figure out the math behind this like from day one. So there's a number of popular libraries that people use. The most popular one is called TensorFlow, and it's made by Google, and that's a really fancy name, but we won't go into what a tensor is, but whatever. All right, that's typically what's considered to be a low-level library, which is like, I was trying to think of a good analogy for this. It would be like the bowels of a ship in the engine room, right? Like, it does all the sort of nitty gritty stuff to make it the ship, our like allegory of the ship, sort of move forward, right? Like, it has all the knobs and the dials and all that kind of stuff.
So it isn't just like some elitist thing.
Right. It does like all the sort of, it does all the little work down the bottom, you know? And like, that's really cool in our analogy, but like it's kind of like a pain in the butt, because actually if you wanted to like drive your ship, you'd have to like run down to the engine room and like, you know, shovel coal or whatever happens in the engine rooms. But like another library, this one called Keras, is sort of would be like the bridge. Like, it's built on top of the engine room, and it means that you can sort of do this, you know, train these networks in a much easier way, and a much way that like is a at a level of abstraction that someone who was trying to train a model in a week or a month or something like that would be able to do easier than like sort of dig, like building the machine, you know, like building everything from scratch.
Right. It's like the difference between writing in like machine, you know, machine level code, and then writing in like an object oriented language or something.
Yeah, no, exactly. And like the most popular of these is called Keras, and Francois Chollet, who is a Google researcher, created it. So like, that's why you should care what this guy says. This guy absolutely
he's the father of high level
right
whatever, and it's this called is Keras.
Like,
yeah,
And this is the library that like everyone's going to be using, right? Like this is just, this is the thing that's going to be, you know, if it's not the most popular now, it's probably going to be the most popular in the next few years. And like, this is a really sort of big deal. And clearly he knows what in the world he's talking about when he talks about what the future of deep learning is there. So I think when someone like Cholet says that he's going to say what the future is, you know, like how the field is going to move in the future, I think it sort of behooves us in a way to listen to what he's saying, because clearly this guy knows what he's talking about. So here we go. The three or four, I have to remember off the top of my head, how many, you know, like how many predictions he has. Mm-hmm. So number one, the first sort of medium term prediction that he has is that deep learning is going to be thought of less in terms of models, but more as models as programs. Now, he doesn't really think about it the way you and I are thinking about it, at least not the way I was thinking about it. I was thinking about it as like machine learning and like deep learning as a software library, which it kind of already is. He's actually thinking about it, and this is probably why he's a lot smarter than I am, he's thinking about it in a way more conceptual level. Because deep learning's like a one-trick pony. You set up everything, like the data that you want and how you want to predict it and how you want to measure, you know, how good your predictions are. Then you train it and it predicts things. But there's like a whole nother spectrum out there where that's like most software. Like it's way more flexible than deep learning, but requires sort of human intelligence. Like, for example, you could have a piece of software that a customer, you know, swipes their credit card, and this piece of software checks the credit card to make sure there's enough credit on it. And then if there's enough credit, it sends the money to the store, and it, you know, adds a line to his bank record that's saying that he bought something, and it checks for, you know, cybercrime or whatever. Like, it's sort of way more flexible what you can do in a software program than, like, I just learned this one thing over and over again. Cholet believes that where deep learning is headed, it's actually more the idea that that latter one, that super flexibility, will be how deep learning works, but using learning. So it'll sort of learn how to learn things. And it'll have all these different tools available. So say you could tell it, well, you know, I need you to know how to protect my company from fraud. And the deep learning system would learn how to do that, whether that means training a neural network to detect, you know, fake credit card numbers, or, you know, like whatever. It would just know, it would figure out, you would give it the task, and then it would figure out how to accomplish that task. It would sort of learn how to do that.
Yeah, this particular perspective was actually a huge shift from how I've also thought about models. So like, I was kind of thinking the same line that you were, that it was just going to be this one basic tool and it can get complicated. But this particular approach of thinking about it is actually totally legit. I mean, because it has to, models have to evolve to address more of the different realities that they're trying to model, right? Like, and so they're just going to get more complex. And these hyper complex models can easily be organized into programs. And thinking of it that way was just a really cool and like bigger, different shift from how I was thinking about it. So it, like in your example, when you said protect my company from fraud, it would try to train the neural network to detect fake credit cards and do like five other things that would have, that could possibly be, which is like different from how I always thought about using models. It'd be like, I would be the person that has to put each of the different ones in place and train each one separately and kind of like figure that whole, how they all interact with each other. I thought I would have to do that. But it's just kind of a really cool and like almost obvious way to think about how these models can evolve.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like a generalization of this thing. Mm-hmm. Like instead of it being a one trick pony, it has whatever it will learn, whatever sort of system it needs to learn to figure out the problem that you give it, which is like super interesting. And it flows into actually his second prediction, which is that deep learning will move beyond what is called back propagation, which means, I guess I have to fucking explain that. All right, here we go.
Yeah, I have no idea what that is. Go.
Okay, so neural networks take some input, like an image or a piece of text. It converts it into numbers, like values. Mm-hmm. And then these values are transformed via a network of nodes and connections between the nodes, like a bunch of points with lines between the points. So this is called forward propagation, where the data from that one image is forward propagated through all of those connections and nodes to get to the end, which is the end prediction. right? So it sends the data forward through the network.
Mm-hmm.
However,
and when you say network, are you saying that there's some math or some calculations that happen as they move between nodes?
Right. Every single time it hits a node, things are summarized together, and every single time it passes through one of those connections, you basically times it by some number, and like that's the massive transformation that happens like over and over and over again, many times over, because it's quote unquote deep. And then you get to some end, which is like, say, for example, last week we talked about predicting a photo of sweet potato fries. You would start with a photo of, say, not sweet potato fries. You would send it through the network. You would forward propagate it through the network. And then you would say, this is a photo. We know if it's sweet potato, like humans have decided if this is a sweet potato. Mm-hmm. We have the answer. Is it right? Great. If it's not right, then we have to do this thing called back propagation, which is, this is weirdly explained. Okay, backpropagation is where we actually go back and we assign the blame to each of those lines in the network.
So gotcha.
Each of
those, like, what things went got it wrong.
Exactly, and how much each one got it wrong.
Oh, okay.
And so we sort of assign blame to all those different parts, and that assignment is called backpropagation because we send that error, that blame, back through the network. So we send the data forward through the network, we calculate how much error that is, and then we send that error back through the network, and then, you know, doing that over and over again, we sort of learn how to, you know, what exactly transformations to make. Okay. That's complicated enough. The part of it that gets more complicated is specifically what we're doing is calculating the partial derivatives of those things.
Oh God, I lost you.
I know. So this is where we're just gonna say it like calculates the blame, by sending that sort of blame for the error back through the network. And it does that by basically taking the derivative of stuff. However, just like we were talking about in the last prediction that he had, some of that stuff isn't actually, you know, you can't really work calculus on it. Like, for example, if I swipe my credit card, charge my credit card company, but if I swipe, you know, my debit card, take the money out of my bank account, there's no, like, derivative there. Like, that isn't math. That's, like, mm-hmm. logic. And so using the backpropagation doesn't work for that, right? You need something, a more general strategy for learning rather than just doing the, you know, calculus and that kind of stuff over and over again. And he talks to like a few different ways that might work. We don't need to go into those. But what I love about that is the idea that like a more general way of trying to figure out, like if you think that deep learning is going to be way more flexible in how it ends up solving problems, like sometimes it uses this kind of model, sometimes it uses something more algorithmic, sometimes it uses some kind of like something more complicated. In that case, you can't use one method, for example, backpropagation, to do it. You have to allow it to choose between lots of different ways of learning and doing those kind of things. And that's all a little bit complicated, but backpropagation is a fundamental, fundamental part of deep learning. And the idea that we need to move beyond it is like a very probably true and also a very kind of sweeping statement that like, it would be like if we're like, hey guys, we're not going to use beef and hamburgers anymore.
We just got to get beyond it.
Yeah, we're moving beyond beef. And everyone's like, holy shit, all I do is cook beef all day, guys. And it's like, no, we got to go beyond beef.
Does he provide any ideas of what beyond looks like?
He does. He talks about a few things like genetic learning, which is like, we don't need to go into like all the little nuances.
Okay, there's a link. There'll be a link.
Yeah. So basically he's saying that there's like, we need to go beyond this one method of this kind of stuff, because a lot of these, if the model is more flexible, not everything will be able to be done using math, basically. Like the same kind of math over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The next one he talks about, which is related to the two, I like his style here, is that there'll be way more automated machine learning. So currently machine learning data scientists and machine learning engineers like myself handcraft these neural networks. Like literally we like design that network of nodes and connections by hand. Like this layer of neurons are going to be this type, and then after that we'll have a layer that's this type, and then after that we'll have a layer that's this type. We sort of handcraft them. That's really mm-hmm. fucking stupid. Like that is not the way it should be done. That's not the way that it's going to be done in the future. And you know, Cholet like hits the nail on the head with this, where that structure, that architecture of like nodes and connections and how that thing looks, that should be learnt. Like the model should learn how to structure itself to solve the problem that we have. And that
so
is...
So So this Wait. Particular point. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
No. I was just saying that like that makes like in that way it would learn how best to teach itself to solve a problem, which makes a lot of sense.
I think that this point is probably the more difficult one for me to conceptualize because where my brain wants to take it is that it's going to be like a truly intelligent machine where it's not just stepping stones of things that we use and it's kind of stitched together the way you're saying, but there'll be some kind of a leap from where we are to now. I mean, we already have tons of libraries that millions of developers are using and reusing around the world, but for an automated system to write the code, to build the libraries and then create the layers and then use that library to build applications that are truly useful, like, you know, without human influence at all, seems really unbelievable to me. I'm sure that that's possible. I just am like blown away by the concept of that. And I think from like the perspective of it making a data scientist's life easier, I don't doubt the feasibility of it at all. But I'm wondering, like, are we talking about things that just make data, like the workflows of data scientists easier and faster? Or are we talking about automated machine learning and building applications that are useful to people and then also somehow totally free of the human touch?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I feel like, I mean, I'm not going to speak for him, but I would imagine in stuff like this, the first sort of automated machine learning things are going to be very specific and very sort of like elegant but simple solutions to solve like small problems. That's typically how, in my mind, like science works a lot, where like we don't figure out the general solution for everything. We figure it out for like one little thing, like one field or like medicine or something. And it's sort of like we're good at disease detection in this way and the model's training itself to how it should structure itself or something like that. But it's not like a grand sweeping thing yet. That comes with time or it doesn't come at all. But like, you know, I definitely feel like the first thing that happened will be in like a sort of very narrow case that's sort of a low hanging fruit that we can actually reach.
Right.
As opposed to like, okay, oh no, we're going to flick a switch and like lights are going to come on a robot and then it's just going to like,
right, like
alive.
It's going to invent some new software for you to, you know, like that type of thing is probably a little bit a ways. So I think, you know, like as far as improving the workflows for people within working with data, I'm sure that that's within reach.
Yeah, I think in like sort of specific cases, I could totally see it. You know, like if you wanted to know if something was sweet potato fries or not, you could sort of say, hey, these are sweet potato, like here's photos of sweet potato fries, here's photos of not sweet potato fries, train a model. And like, it would say, okay, cool. This is how I should structure the model. This is how I should measure error. This is, you know, it'll do all the things that I did, but it would just do it on its own for that one specific little case.
Yeah, totally.
And then we build on that farther and farther and farther again, which actually leads to the last one. See how well this transition is going? Okay, so Sholay believes that deep learning systems will be what he calls lifelong learners. Basically, that it would never throw out old models. And I actually really love the nuance of this. So code is basically reused forever. Like any piece of code, and it's, you know, it's put on GitHub or you save it on your laptop, you like people reuse code all the time. And this is really interesting idea because a lot of code is sort of built upon other code used by other people, right? You know, like code is sort of built on top of each other all over the place, where like you could have a piece of code from 10 years ago, but it works really well, and you just sort of copy and paste it when you need that function to do whatever. Now, that's not true when it comes to machine learning models. Machine learning models are sort of retrained from the start every single time. So, for example, the example that he actually uses is it would be like if you relearned English every single time you read a new book, right? And like, of course not. That's like stupid. You at some point, went to school and your brain trained a model of how to read the English language. And then years later, you reuse that model to read a book on cooking and learn to cook, right? So you used one model to learn another model under this like analogy kind of thing. And like that to me is so important because you can imagine models being trained all over the place. And if you could sort of draw on these models left and right to do all these different things, like models could be used and sort of like stitched together to do way more interesting things because it's like 20 models in a row that are sort of working towards this larger goal. And this is his quote: "This global library and associated model growing system will be able to achieve some point of human-like extreme generalization. Given a new task, a new situation, the system would be able to assemble a new working model appropriate to the task using very little data," which is cool. Like, I loved, like, that is awesome. I realized, I never actually thought about this before, but everything I've ever trained, I've sort of thrown out afterwards, right? It's either, like, in production or it's, like, not there.
Well, okay, you know the hot dog thing from last week?
Yeah.
So would you, like, how could you use something like that? I guess maybe what he's saying is that it would just be one of millions of other models that potentially could be used by somebody who wants to maybe build on it or use it in some way. But, like, the concept is that you would just need tons of those different models together.
Yeah, I mean, I think sort of, so GitHub is, you know, a huge repository of code, and people put code up there all the time. And you could imagine a global repository of models that, you know, work pretty well. Say someone trains a model that's hot dog, not hot dog. I train a model that's sweet potato fries, not sweet potato fries. We add that to thousands of other models that are, you know, this fruit and not fruit or all that. And then all of a sudden we put them together and we have a massive sort of system for classifying fruit, right? Or whatever, classifying food. And it's not one model for all, this is a really weird analogy, but it's not one model for all food. It's all of these models from all these different people kind of cobbled together, and, you know, like, and then we kind of work from there. That idea of anytime someone makes a model, not throwing it away, like, of, you know, if it works, then keep it and sort of build a global library of all these models, and they're sort of stitched together. Mm-hmm. That sort of leads to all of his other points, which is like, well, say, you know, I tell the deep learning model, hey, learn to fight, you know, cybercrime or something, and then it goes over to this global repository and it's like, oh, I want this model to do this, and I want this other model to, like, detect, you know, bad people through their social media, and I want this one to detect credit card fraud, and I want this one to detect fake numbers, and, you know, like, all, like, they're just sort of grabbing what they needed in this, like, really high-fluting system that currently doesn't exist. But I love the idea. I like the idea that, like, I could just grab a bunch of off-the-shelf models for doing things, and kind of, it's more like the job of a in production data scientist and machine learning engineer is basically just to stitch these models together. Like, in the short term, you could sort of imagine someone stitching these models together, just like how people sort of stitch code together. Like, it's pretty rare for someone to, like, open a blank, you know, file and like, now I'm coding Google. Like, that doesn't happen. People, like, grab templates and you know, pre-made open source libraries and, you know, copy code in and, like, just all that stuff to kind of cobble it together to make things work. That doesn't happen right now when it comes to machine learning models, and I think it kind of should. Totally makes sense.
Yeah, he doesn't really talk too much about the timelines for these predictions. So I can see them kind of having a range of, like earlier lower hanging fruit that we can at least work within this specific, like, data industry and see how those things can be helpful. And then over time, hopefully see them across the bigger industries and more general applications.
Yeah, and I think that they'll probably be developed, you know, if they happen, they'll probably be developed in parallel. So I could imagine sort of a GitHub for models first, right?
Right.
And then, like, a sort of a simple learner that learns how to pick models off of that. And then, you know, like, sort of like they're developed kind of parallel and separate, and they kind of are connected down the line and all that stuff. I just think, you know, his sort of greater point about all this kind of stuff of where the field is going, and it becomes what I actually really liked about these is his sort of broader idea of, like, he knows the limits of what deep learning is, and he knows what it is, and then from that he can sort of see how it could be better.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't think I'm there with deep learning where, like, I can sort of see, like, I'm so impressed that it works that I'm not at the point where I'm sort of seeing, you know, 10 feet down the line.
Yeah, well, my favorite quote is the last sentence in his post. And it reads, as such, this perpetually learning model growing system could be interpreted as an AGI, which is kind of a cool term, an artificial general intelligence. And then he says, but don't expect any singularitarian robot apocalypse to ensue. That's pure fantasy coming from a long series of profound misunderstandings of both intelligence and technology. Which I love, and I can't wait to, hopefully he'll write about that. I can't wait to hear more about about that, right? Like, I totally want him to break down what these myths of intelligence and technology that people are carrying around, and then, you know, being afraid of the robot apocalypse.
There we go. We have a topic for another episode then.
I know. Well, hopefully he'll read that, and then we can use that on their show. So that is our show for the week. If y'all like what you heard, subscribe and hang out. Say hi to us on Twitter. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at @partiallyd. You can follow me, Vidya, at @vid_spandana. You can follow Chris at @chrisalbin. And you can follow Jonathan at @jonathanmorgan. Have a great week, everyone.
Bye.